This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films It, Home Again, Antimatter, 9/11, Rememory, and a quick look at Death Note on Netflix. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the home cinema roundup featuring Clowntergeist. It is a scary clown weekend here on the Fat Guys at the Movies radio show. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to talk about is Star Wars related. The big news that hit this week is the fact that Colin Trevorrow has left the production on Star Wars Episode 9. Now, this, of course, always scares people when a director leaves a project. And if you remember when the directors of the original Han Solo project left, a lot of people were like, oh my God, what happened? But here's the thing. You have to understand how directors work. Directors, a lot of them, consider themselves auteurs. A lot of them consider themselves the ultimate control of the movie. What they say goes, and they are not to be questioned. It is their artistic vision. But when you work on a franchise like Star Wars, you aren't having creative control unless you're George Lucas back in the 90s, in the 2000s. But right now, Disney owns Star Wars, and Disney has a very specific way how they want these movies to go. Disney, as a corporation and as a producer of movies, has always had a strong hand in directing the flow of their movies, directing how their films get made, and they have a lot of oversight. And that may annoy you as an artistic person, but that's how it works. And that's okay because it works out for the best a lot of times. Gareth Edwards, at the end of Rogue One, there were reshoots that were done that apparently he either was not involved in or he was not in control of. And I believe that the final edit of it wasn't even something that he had a hand in. He still had his name on it, but there was a lot of tinkering from Disney. And I know that that offends some people because they say the director should be in charge. But when you have a franchise, it's bigger than a single film. Disney's trying to control something. And you see that with the Marvel movies. You saw that with Ant-Man when they had Edgar Wright planning to make the movie. Now, I think it would have been an interesting movie with Edgar Wright. And I'm not saying it would be a bad movie, but it would not have been a full Marvel movie. It would have had a total different feel to it. And it's Disney's property. They can do what they want to. If Edgar Wright wants to make a superhero movie, do his own superhero movie, like Sam Raimi did when he made Darkman in the early 90s after he was not able to make the first Batman movie in the late 80s. Now, I know a lot of people are like, well, who's going to direct this one? And people, I've heard people say, oh, we should have Christopher Nolan direct it. No. Christopher Nolan, look, he can do some interesting movies, but I don't think he's as good as everyone says he is. And if there's anyone who's not going to kowtow to the demands of a studio, it's going to be Christopher Nolan, for better or for worse. I think the guy's a pompous windbag, but he will not do what Disney says just because Disney wants to do it. Same thing with David Fincher. You may think he's the greatest director ever. Heck, he has a history of not following studio influence, like with Alien 3. That's why that movie was such a mess. Not because it was a bad movie per se, but because they had a director who wasn't playing ball and he just caused problems and it didn't work. And again, we saw that also happen with Josh Trank in the Fantastic Four movie, when he wasn't working with the studio. He was, I want to make my own movie. And then the studio's like, no, we want it to be this way. He's like, ah, the heck with you. I'm going to do it. And then you end up with a mess. So who's going to do this? I've heard some people say maybe Rian Johnson can do it because he's doing Episode 8. Well, first, let's see how Episode 8 turns out. But I also think Disney's going to apply the Marvel formula and say, unless we find somebody who we can really, really work with, like the Russo brothers, we're not going to give duplicate films to everybody. We're not going to make this become someone's property, because that's what happened on the DC side, where suddenly it was so much a Zack Snyder property for the entire Justice League that, with the exception of Wonder Woman, everything else is Zack Snyder. that's no longer Warner Brothers' franchise. That's Zack Snyder's franchise. And it kind of has to untangle itself with the Justice League and how Wonder Woman, how well that one did. So don't get your panties in a bunch that Colin Trevorrow left. That's okay. I mean, whoever they replace him with, they replace him with, like, Michael Bay. That'll be awful. But, you know, somebody like Martin Campbell, who's done some kind of stinkers, which I thought was okay, but it was a stinker of a movie in terms of success, was Green Lantern. But he also brought back Bond twice with GoldenEye and Casino Royale. And it's not that they need to be manipulated. They just need to play ball. Now, another piece of Star Wars news, and this is just a little follow-up to something I was talking about earlier, Star Wars and Marvel movies are going to go off of Netflix and everything else, and they're going to end up on the Disney streaming service. That was announced this week. I predicted that. I said they're going to do it anyways. It's their property. Why would they want to do it through Netflix? I think what you're going to end up having to have happen is there's going to have to be some sort of full package. There's going to have to be some sort of... It'll essentially be like cable. Whereas cable, you can get a packaging of HBO, Showtime, Stars, all those things, so you can watch everything you want. And at some point, you're going to be able to have to access all these different streaming services and sort of like siphon out a little bit of money from everybody just to get your own package and to customize it. Because just waiting for stuff to come and go off of streaming services is silly. And it's also silly to only get Disney movies and then have to pay $10 a month or whatever that cost will be, because you're going to be spending $150 a month if you get everything. Finally, the other piece of news, which goes back to franchises, is the James Bond franchise is up for grabs. You know, the production agreement has expired with Sony, and a lot of people were looking at Warner Brothers coming in, but now Amazon and Apple are trying to get it, which I think would be great, because I think we need to still diversify to Amazon and Apple. I don't know if I want Netflix doing it, because Netflix, I don't know if that's the right delivery system for a James Bond movie, but Amazon's doing really well with its streaming. So heck, you know, look at Manchester by the Sea. That was by Amazon Studios, and that won awards. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Lady Bird. Not about Lady Bird Johnson. It's a sort of coming-of-age story starring Saoirse Ronan and directed by Greta Gerwig. It opens on November 10th.
Lady Bird, is that your given name?
Yeah.
Why is it in quotes?
I gave it to myself. It's given to me by me.
Lady Bird always says that she lives on the wrong side of the tracks, but I always thought that was like a metaphor. But there are actual train tracks.
What she did was very baller. It was very anarchist.
Put the magazine back!
She has a big heart, your mom.
She's warm, but she's also kind of scary.
You can't be scary and warm.
I think you can. Your mom is.
This looks good enough in the sense that it's a Greta Gerwig movie. And I think she's got a really, you know, unique approach. And she's very warm as a director and a writer. I mean, she can write stuff that you can relate to. The biggest problem I have with this, as much as I think Saoirse Ronan's a wonderful actress and very relatable, I want to see Greta Gerwig in the movie. I like Greta Gerwig's screen presence. Even in Garbage, she's actually one of the more compelling people I'll see in a movie. So it's a shame to see her step completely behind the camera. So Lady Bird, I'm going to see that in November, and I'm sure I'm going to get a screener of it eventually. This is totally heading deep into award season for that. The next one I want to talk about is Insidious, The Last Key, which opens January 5th.
People who need help with matters that can't be explained, come to me. These hauntings can be terrifying things. I should know. I've faced many evils in my life. This one is different, though. The haunted house. Is my family's house.
As much as I love the Insidious movies, Insidious 2 was okay and I respected what it was trying to do, but I think it was kind of a bit of a misfire. Insidious 3 was kind of garbage. As much as I love Lynn Shay, I think she's actually great in these movies. She's sort of that heart and soul of the film once you get outside of the, no pun intended, heart and soul. Once you get outside of the Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne as the main characters, I like Lynn Shay. The thing that terrifies me is the January 5th release date. I remember the Insidious movies, of at least the sequel, I think the first one came out in September sometime, but it was like on Friday the 13th. January 5th is like a notoriously terrible time for movies, and it's usually garbage horror movies, and that kind of scares me. But still, I think this series is at least interesting. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the films 9/11, Home Again, and Antimatter. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into some of the movie reviews. We're still in September. We still have movies that are not screening. And there are some movies that are opening limited. Like the next one that's coming up that I'm going to talk about. And I think I saw a poster for it. This was a movie that completely falls under the radar. Right now, it's the only movie anybody cares about this week. But there's other stuff out there. And the first one I want to talk about is 9/11. A group of people in an elevator in the Twin Towers on 9/11 face the prospect of escaping or dying.
You know how sometimes you just don't want to get out of bed?
Yep.
That was me today. Everything okay?
Yep.
There's no one who has not been affected by this.
Jeffrey, what's going on?
I don't have a clue.
Is anybody there? Can anybody hear me? Guys, we got 32 elevators off the grid. All the upper floors are gone.
Betsy, it's Eddie.
Baby, you're not going to believe this.
Now, this is obviously coming out on the weekend of 9/11, and it'll be the 16th anniversary of the event. It stars Charlie Sheen. It has a weird hodgepodge cast. It has Charlie Sheen and Whoopi Goldberg and Luis Guzman. And look, I mean, I was in New York in 9/11 back in 2001. So I feel a little closer to this because I was so close to what happened there. I mean, I was about 10 blocks away. And this is, it's a sensitive topic. It's odd that Charlie Sheen's the one they picked for this one, because I would never expect him to be in this kind of a movie, especially after his drunken explosion off of Two and a Half Men and then Anger Management. I have to be honest, it looks like a TV movie. You know, sort of like United 93 was a fantastic movie about 9/11. Then there was, I think, like Flight 93, was a TV movie that was essentially the same kind of deal. But I mean, Paul Greengrass did such a great job with United 93 and really had such impact with that, that, you know, anything that was recreating the same kind of events just doesn't quite have the same oomph. And even when Oliver Stone did World Trade Center a couple years after the event, it was a fine movie, but I still question whether a movie like this, I mean, it's been 16 years, but you're still sort of like milking the misery out of it. And there are movies that sort of like have the blowback from 9/11, like Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close. That one kind of falls around, or like Remember Me, that awful movie with Robert Pattinson in it. But I don't know. This movie, I mean, it looks like its heart's in the right place. It looks like it's trying to honor the victims, and it's trying to give. And I will say this, it looks like it's giving a unique approach to it. It just doesn't look like it's anything more than a TV movie that got the theatrical release because it's coming out on 9/11. So I'm going to have to say this wasn't screened, and so I couldn't see it, but it has to get a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Home Again. A recently separated mother brings in three good-looking young renters to make ends meet.
I like them.
Namaste, I'm Teddy.
But they're dead broke, so I thought they could stay here.
Stay here?
Try looking at this as something that could be sort of exciting.
Okay, guys, let's just do our best not to cramp each other's style.
Perfect. I miss our family. Let's fix this.
You make a decision about your life when you're 25 years old. You think, is that like a good life decision for the rest of your life?
This one stars Reese Witherspoon, and they're using the term cougar around her, even though she still looks, I mean, she looks really good. She's in her 40s, but she still looks really good. I mean, gosh, there's a lot of, you know, I know a lot of women in their 40s, and they don't look like Reese. I know a lot of women in their 20s who don't look like Reese Witherspoon looked like in her 30s. So if she didn't win the genetic lottery with a little bit of probably some help from plastic surgery, who knows? This one looks terrible. This one looks like just a throwaway, dumb non-romance. They didn't screen this. It's getting a release, but it's going up against it. Nobody cares about this movie outside of it. This is your very typical counter-programming, but we're not at the beginning of May when something like Maid of Honor went up against Iron Man, and we're not in the middle of July like when The Dark Knight went up against Ghosts of Girlfriends Past. This looks like it's a forgettable movie. Absolutely. I mean, it was way under the radar, so they didn't show it to me. I maybe could have gone and seen it in the theaters, but I have a lot to do this week. There's a lot of other movies to talk about that actually gave me a chance to see them. So, Home Again gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
The last one I want to talk about in this segment is one I did see, and that is Antimatter. A PhD student working with wormholes discovers she suddenly has trouble making new memories.
Want to see a magic trick? I can make matter disappear. Everything went okay though, right?
Why do you ask?
I'm having trouble remembering things.
Sure.
How did you know I was here? What is happening to me, Nate? What is that?
Every time!
Why don't I eat? Why don't I remember?
What is going on? Every year, or almost every year, every now and then I have to skip it for various reasons. I was on vacation this year. But there's a 24-hour science fiction movie marathon that goes on in Columbus, Ohio, at the Drexel Theater. And I've talked about it before on the show at length. And this movie reminds me of the kind of films that I would see as sort of like low-budget premieres. Now, some of them are terrible. Some of these low-budget premieres are terrible. And there was one called Time Lapse, and it ended up going, well, it says it went direct to video, but I do know that some places it did play limited in theatrical, like, you know, like specialty houses. And Time Lapse, they showed that at the Drexel Marathon. That was a really neat movie. And there's certain movies that are science fiction that are like just really not connectable to the average viewer. And so they're not going to do well. They're not like a, you know, Star Wars or Star Trek or a Marvel superhero movie. And I even remember back in the day when I was younger and I would see these movies, there was some that, like, I remember Primer. That one got a little bit of a street cred for being a sci-fi movie. Now, I didn't particularly like Primer, but it became sort of this indie darling, and it was about a guy who discovers time travel. It was a very low budget grassroots film. And this movie feels the same way, where it deals with wormholes and science and like that hard theoretical science that's not just easy to be explained. And there's a reason that they have mumbo jumbo scientific gobbledygook that they use in like Star Trek, because they don't want to have to explain the hard science, because that's going to turn off a lot of average viewers. And so they managed to go around the science enough to at least make it work scientifically to somebody who knows science, but it also is digestible for the viewer. And it's an interesting movie. It falls into some cliches here and there, because she has a relationship with another scientist there, but it shows where they're trying to develop a basic wormhole teleportation. But it does fall into subset of science fiction genre that I love, which is people trying to do something better for the world that then has a problem with it. And it's sort of like people in the lab trying to do something good and then something goes wrong. Now, this is not a monstrous creature like Splice or that movie Life that came out on the spaceship a couple months ago. This is just, it doesn't work out well for him. It gets a little dense at times with that. And finally, when we figure out what the problem is, where this woman is having problems with developing memories and reacting to it, the movie does sort of spend a little too much time just her being in confusion. And it does bog down as we're leaving the second act and going into the third act. But overall, it's a neat little movie and a fun little sci-fi flick. And if you like hard sci-fi, like laboratory sci-fi, it gives you a lot to think about. And it does give you certain elements of nature and philosophical questions that go beyond science. So it's I respect the heck out of it, because it does not turn away from intellectual pursuits. It's not perfect, but it's still worth checking out. If you can track down Antimatter, do, because it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Stephen King's It and Rememory. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare.
In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to be talking about the new movie, the one that everybody's going to be talking about this week, and the one that everybody thinks is going to break records this week, and that is Stephen King's It. A group of children face off against an evil clown that haunts Derry, Maine every 27 years.
My grandfather thinks this town is cursed. That all the bad things that happen in this town are because of one thing. An evil thing.
Bill, if you'll come with me, you'll float too.
George. I saw something.
A clown. Yeah, I saw him too.
Are you just going to pretend it isn't happening like everyone else in this town?
Now, to review this movie, I've brought some of my kids in the past on the show. I brought my son Nicholas on to talk about stuff like Diary of a Wimpy Kid and Captain Underpants. And I brought my other son Ben to talk about the new Spider-Man movie. Well, of course, you know, everyone has to have their chance. So my oldest son, Liam, wants to be in on this. And Liam's been on the show before, like years ago. His voice sounds a little bit different. Say hello, Liam.
Hi.
So tell me, first of all, let everybody know who you are really quickly, you know, what you do in your life.
I'm Liam Michael Carr, and I do theater over at Dublin Side High School.
In Columbus, Ohio.
In Columbus, Ohio.
Well, Dublin, Ohio.
Right. I'm also very afraid of clowns, so yes. This was an exciting experience for me.
Now let's talk about it. Let's review It. Because you are afraid of clowns, and this is a nice little story. We go to the Kings Island Amusement Park every year, and they do the haunted house stuff down there, and they've got great haunted houses. It's outside of Cincinnati and in Mason, Ohio, and they have a clown one that's all full of day-glow paint and glows in the dark and black lights, and he was terrified going in there. And this was only, what, last year?
Yeah, this was... Well, you did it twice.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
2 years in a row.
Yeah, 2 years in a row. It was last year and the year before. So
yeah, you hate clowns.
No, I do not like them.
So tell me why you even wanted to see this movie.
Oh, because, you know, it looks very interesting. And it's one of those movies where, you know, everyone else is going to see it. So you might as well go or else you're going to be, like, out of the loop.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see it because I knew it was a really good movie and I could tell it was going to be really good.
Now, are you a big Stephen King fan?
Yeah, I love his movies. I haven't read that many of his books. I started to read Pet Sematary, but I don't think I ever finished it.
Okay. Do you know the Pet Sematary? He thought it was too disturbing to finish. He actually threw it out and his wife dug it out of the trash for him to finish. But you never read It. You never read the original book.
I never read it on the count that it's 1,000 pages.
Okay, it's good to know that we have those standards. And now, you've also never seen the original 1990 miniseries, have you?
No, I've not. I've heard it's really good, but at least the first half is, but I never saw it.
Oh, it's good. Well, I mean, it's a TV movie.
Right.
Yeah, and it's directed by Tommy Lee Wallace. We were talking about that. And
right.
Directs one of our favorite movies ever.
Halloween 3.
Season of the Witch. That's right. With Tom Atkins.
And his mustache.
And his mustache, because it's a different movie when he's not... Then you get just The Fog, which is a different
right,
movie.
Right, which is like...
But Pennywise the Clown in that one was played by Tim Curry.
Right, right.
Who is, of course, Frankenfurter from the original mm-hmm. Rocky Horror, which you have seen.
I have seen that.
I showed it to you when you were way too young to have seen it.
You showed it last year.
I showed it to you before
that. It was definitely like last year.
Oh, no, we watched it last year, but I've showed it to you before.
No.
Oh, I thought I did. Maybe I wouldn't. Maybe even I had standards at one point. So anyway, so 13. 13 was, or no, 15 was
15.
The age. But your brother was 13.
Yeah.
All right, but anyways, tell me what you thought of It.
I thought it was a really good, very well-done movie. I thought they did a great job of portraying how it should have been portrayed. I thought they casted the kids very well, and I thought that Skarsgård did a really great job.
Yeah, well, that's the two big things in this.
Right,
the first
right.
one is, let's just talk about Pennywise.
Right.
Because that was considered the best part of the miniseries, because Tim Curry's fantastic, and he brought so much to that character, and it is the clown. This one, if they do a little bit more digital manipulation with the clown, then more respect. But a lot of people were like, how can you replace Tim Curry?
Right.
I think this guy did a great job.
I think he did a fantastic job. One thing I really liked was his facial expressions. He was able to change it so quickly, and it just looked very well.
Yeah.
It looked very professional and well done.
Well, and I like the fact that from the moment you see him,
Right.
You realize he's just not a guy in a clown costume.
Right. You realize that, oh, great.
There's something there. And I actually saw a friend of mine who's a big horror movie fan on Facebook. He actually saw it at the preview screening that we were there. I didn't see him there, but he did see it, I'm assuming, or he was down in another city. But he had said he didn't like Pennywise's voice. He said it sounded a little too goofy. My thing is I'm like, the thing is, his voice, he did get a little bit goofy and old cartoony, but it's almost like the way he did it wasn't like, I'm going to be a cartoony clown. It's basically what a monster would do to pretend to be a cartoony clown.
Yeah. And I think it fit very well with the character. Like, yeah, I mean, it may have been a little cartoony, but it fit the way that Pennywise actually would do that.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, because Pennywise, it's him, you know, laying a trap. It's him trying to lure in, especially at the beginning with Georgie at the grate, because you see that in the trailers. It's the clown, or whatever the clown is, the monster, pretending to be a clown, but emulating, but there's still something sinister. Even when he does his goofy thing, it's still... It's sort of like if you see these movies where you have like a John Wayne Gacy kind of character where you know his is evil.
Right.
But he's basically acting, you know, to appeal to kids.
Right.
Which is even more disturbing.
Yeah, it makes it even more creepy. The creepiness factor raises like 10 inches.
Yeah. And so they have a lot of effects with him, but that's okay because still you have the clown as the clown. And I thought that was fantastic.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, the kids, I thought, were fantastic. This is sort of like the apex of Stephen King stuff, where you see a lot of stuff that he's had in other movies. Like Stand By Me or The Body, which was the original book, it has ultimately the same kind of characters in this. You get the glasses, you got the fat kid, you got the main kid. So he does duplicate this a lot. And even in a movie like Dreamcatcher, or the book Dreamcatcher, you see these same characters show up again. And he has other tropes in there, like a dead brother, which is very common in his stuff, an abusive father. So he has these things that make the movie feel very familiar and connected to other Stephen King stuff.
Right. One thing I actually noticed about Stephen King's writing is he will make usually the kids the good guys rather than the parents. Like the parents, I don't think even one of the parents acted like as a good guy.
Well, and I think the way they were portraying the parents is like the parents are sort of like infected by Pennywise.
Right, like they realize it's happening, but they really don't know what's happening.
Yeah, like he's they're sort of under this drugged state, so they're all really creepy. Every adult, anybody over 15 is creepy as
even those under 15 are creepy as get out.
Well, the ones that are 15, the bullies are about
15. The bullies.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you've gone through puberty, you're horrifying in this movie. At times I thought the dialogue was hard to hear.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know if it was the sound mix or the theater or whatever, but I had a great time. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was actually one of the best Stephen King adaptations, not just recently, but of all time, because his movies have had a rocky time in the theater.
I thought that it just did a fantastic job, honestly.
All right, so final grade?
Rocks.
I'm going to say it rocks, too.
It rocks.
Excellent!
All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quick about Rememory. This is a smaller movie, no pun intended, because it does star Peter Dinklage. A man steals a device that allows you to record and store memories in order to find the killer of the person who invented it.
This device extracts the actual memory from your brain and displays it before you.
This is a terrible loss.
I just wanted to say how truly sorry I am.
How did you know, Gordon?
He saved my life.
He was found dead in his office with gunshots in the wall.
Gunshots? No bullet wounds.
He was working with a lot of troubled people.
We need to find out what happened to you, Gordon.
I can't see your memories, but I can see the memories of those near you.
I love Peter Dinklage. I love Peter Dinklage before it was popular to love Peter Dinklage. I always thought he was a fantastic actor, and I love the fact that even though he is a dwarf, he gets some major roles and some roles that they don't make a point of his stature. You know, like in Days of Future Past, I thought that was great. And I love the fact that they just have him in this movie and he just plays a character. And as good as he is, and it's got a great cast because it's got like Julian Armand in it. This movie is so convoluted. I fell asleep in the middle of it. I really had trouble even just following what the purpose of the film was. And maybe part of that was intentional in order for them to make it this dream logic kind of movie. But there's a difference between making something a little bit confusing and just making it a chore to watch. And I felt like this was a chore to watch. Honestly, I couldn't even tell you how it ended. That's how uninspiring this film was. So as much as I love Peter Dinklage, I want to see him do more stuff and I want to see him do great dramatic stuff. This was not one of them. So I'm going to have to say that Rememory kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Death Note, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Clowntergeist. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
99 red balloons floating in the summer sky. Panic bags, it's red alert. There's something here from somewhere else. 99 red balloons go by.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and his son Liam Carr's here as well. He's reviewing a couple scary movies with me as we lean on into October in the nearer future. And I want to talk about one that, now, it's not necessarily new. It's a couple weeks old. It's kind of like when I did War Machine a couple months ago. This one hit Netflix, and I've been wanting to cover it. I've been wanting to talk about it because I think it's an important film because it's directed by Adam Wingard, and it has such a long history, and that is Death Note. This Netflix remake sees a high school boy discovering he has the power over life and death by writing someone's name in a book.
Shall we begin? You're a death god.
Yes.
What exactly can I do with this death note?
Put your name down and see what happens.
It's not gonna solve a few crimes. It's gonna solve all crime. Do you think that I'm crazy?
I think you're not crazy enough. We could change the world.
Have you read the manga?
I haven't read the manga, but I've watched a few episodes of the original series.
Okay, so the big thing I've been hearing, and I think we talked about this as well when we watched
it. Yeah, while we were watching it.
That anybody I know who's a big fan of the manga or the original anime hated this movie.
Oh, everyone. Everyone who loved the anime, loved the manga, hated the movie. Absolutely.
And the reason that they usually gave was that it didn't have the depth, it didn't have the complexity, and it didn't have the quality that those original source materials did.
Right, because it was trying to fit a 32-episode series into a less than 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to do that with anything, let alone a Japanese anime.
Well, yeah, and that's, I think, one of the things that ran into with The Dark Tower is that you're trying to, this massive behemoth epic thing, they try to cram into a movie that both launched into it and try to cover it all. So the other thing I've been hearing, a lot of people complain about the whitewashing of it, but I'm like, to me, the whitewashing doesn't bother me on that because this is just a remake from a Japanese movie to an American movie.
Right. And they're kind of making an American version. Like it takes place in America.
Yeah.
So I can understand why people think it's offensive that it's whitewashing, but it's also very acceptable since it takes place in America.
They're just remaking the movie.
Yeah, they're remaking it from Japanese to American. So.
Yeah. So like when they made the American version of Godzilla, it didn't bother me that they had white people tackling Godzilla because it was an American remake of it.
Right, you know, right.
They were like the one in 1998 with Matthew Broderick is a terrible movie. If you're going to be upset about Matthew Broderick in that movie, be upset because he was just terrible casting, not because he's not Japanese. So this is not a whitewashing movie. This is not where you have a traditional character that then they cast as a white person. This is not casting Emma Stone in Aloha as a Hawaiian woman.
Right.
But what did you think of the movie overall?
If you look at it as a movie outside of the anime, outside of the manga, I think it was actually kind of good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little bit well done. I mean, there was, of course, flaws, as any movie has.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I kind of liked it.
I have to say I didn't hate it. Willem Dafoe as Ryuk, the death goblin or whatever he was.
The death god.
I thought he was great. I mean, you can throw Willem Dafoe in those kind of roles, and he always shines.
Well, yeah.
And I thought that it does. It gets a little muddled in the middle. A lot of movies have second act problems.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, I think overall, especially the beginning and the end, they were both really strong, very strong ending. And
I like the fact that he actually went and he did sort of like almost superhero stuff with the Death Note initially. He's like, well, I'm going to get rid of these international criminals.
Right. I'm going to wipe out crime forever.
Yeah. He went 0 to 60 on that. And I thought that was great because I always hate movies where some snotty little teenager gets a power over, you know, the universe and then uses it to like get a date.
Yeah. Okay. Like an A in English.
Well, he did use
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. He did.
Sure. But yeah, he did other things with it.
Right.
I did think it got a little convoluted and messy in the middle, but I liked how it began and I really thought it ended really, really well. I thought it ended on a strong
note. I think the ending was a very, very strong.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to say that Death Note kind of rocks.
I also got to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's look at the dreadful box office from last weekend. It was like the lowest box office in like 20 years or something like that. Part of it's because, and I said this before, August was not a big month for movies. And so leading into Labor Day, there was really nothing to carry it in. I mean, you were still dealing with The Hitman's Bodyguard in its, what, third week? And Annabelle Creation and The Hitman's Bodyguard were just right on top. But that was all you had in August. You didn't have a Suicide Squad. And then the movies that opened last week, Close Encounters, the 40th anniversary re-release, I mean, a little over 2 million for the 4-day weekend isn't bad at all for a movie that's 40 years old. But you're not getting the bump that like Star Wars did in 1997 when they re-released it. But Tulip Fever, which was the only brand new movie made, it didn't even make 1.4 million over 4 days. To put that in perspective, Baby Driver, which was a big hit, came in at 18 and made more money than Tulip Fever in its first weekend. Even movies like Birth of the Dragon, which was last week's bomb, made more money, almost twice as much money as Tulip Fever. That is how bad Tulip Fever is. The Emoji Movie in its sixth week of release made more than twice what Tulip Fever did. That is how bad Tulip Fever did. And I told you it was going to get buried. Now this week, it's going to be huge.
Oh, absolutely.
I've seen the people tracking it into the 80 million. I think that might be a little bit much. Certainly it's going to make 60 million, I think, at least. And do extremely well this week, mainly because there's nothing else there and we haven't had a hit for weeks.
Right. And this has been highly anticipated by everyone of all ages.
Yes. Well, not all ages. I don't know how many 3-year-olds are excited for this movie.
Or like 87-year-olds.
Okay.
Like, yeah. But I know a bunch of my friends are excited. Like I have a group that's going on Friday.
Yeah. It's a big deal. I think this is going to have no pun intended, a monster hit. I'm going to just say 70 million just to even it out, which is a record, especially considering the September time frame and recent Stephen King movies that haven't done terribly well. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is another clown movie, and that's why I'm keeping Liam around, just so he's terrified.
Absolutely.
And that is Clowntergeist. A woman with a crippling fear of clowns encounters the worst possible malevolent spirit ever. That's right. It's a clown.
Call the sheriff.
Why?
The guy that they're looking for. I think he was here.
Here right now?
No, last night in my room.
Whoever did this left balloons just like that with my daughter. The date and time written on that balloon. That's when she was killed. Did you get a good look at him last night?
He was dressed like a...
like a clown.
Now, just by the title of this movie...
It's one of the best titles ever.
Okay, it's a good title, it's but it's also title. Like, what am I watching?
Well, I mean, it does kind of have a Sharknado vibe to the title.
Sharknado of clowns.
I'm not dismissing this movie as a Sharknado movie. I'm just saying that portmanteau mishmash title, Clowntergeist does work. Or like Poultrygeist about the...
Right.
The turkey that kills people.
Right. It's kind of like, it is a good title and kind of just drags you in and you want to know more. That's the same thing with like Sharknado. It's not a Sharknado movie, but the title
is. This is better than Sharknado.
Yeah,
and it's not a throw off. It's not a goof movie. And that's one of the things I like about it is it's a bona fide attempt to basically make a slasher movie, a movie that would have been a slasher movie in the '80s. And they're making it today just with modern cameras and actresses that are younger.
Right.
And I think that works. It's not a fantastic movie. It's not the beginning and end of cinema. It's not a big budget, deep, intellectual, very densely plotted movie like it is. There's a lot in it that you can pull out in terms of how Pennywise interacts with the kids and the symbols that he uses for each one of them. This is not nearly as deep, and that's okay.
Right, sometimes you just need a lower level movie, but it brings a lot of stuff to the table.
Yeah, except boobs.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, I wish there would have been a couple more boobs in this movie, and by a couple more, I mean any at all. But with that said, this still was a fun movie. It's a good, solid slasher movie. It's, you know, I recently watched The Mutilator, which is a slasher movie from those 80s. Yeah, it's not very good, but it's still fun. It's not deep. It's not symbolic. It's not artistic, but it's that fun little throwaway slasher movie. And that's what this works as. It's the low budget movie of today, slasher film. And I had a lot of fun watching it. And the clown is creepy as all get out.
I've realized that my fear is more in-person clowns.
In person, you're okay watching them on TV?
Well, yeah, because then they can't get me.
What if, okay, yeah, because the rational fear of clowns showing up in your room?
Hey, it's rational, man. Did you not see the news last year?
Well, there were, you know, we don't have as many stalking clowns. Although, what if you just woke up and there were red balloons in your room?
I swear, if you try to put red balloons in my room, I will jump out the window and go to the police.
I would love to see that, because your window is not terribly accessible.
I will become Speedy Gonzalez, and I'll be running down that street.
Well, yeah, but you got to get out of the room first. I do think it's neat. This does have the motif of red balloons in it, because the clown leaves red balloons with the time that you're going to die.
Right.
Written on them.
That's really, really interesting. It's, everyone's got to have a thing. I mean, this clown's thing is red balloons. It's going to be like, here's when you'll die.
Yeah. So, I mean, it certainly has worked to play off of it. So, I'm going to have to say that Clowntergeist kind of rocks.
I say it kind of rocks as well.
It kind of rocks.
The other DVD releases this week include Rough Night, All Eyes on Me, Megan Levy, The Flash Season 3, and Supernatural Season 12. And that's it for the show. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about American Assassin and Mother. Until then, have a fat clown time at the movies.